This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Likely you and your mom never heard of Ignaz Semmelweis, but they both subscribe to a simple act of hygiene that could save your life: washing your hands. In 1847, this concept was very controversial. A Hungarian physician, Dr. Semmelweis, saw that women who gave birth under the care of doctors in Vienna had a 3 times higher rate of death than those who were cared for by midwives. The difference was the simple act of washing their hands with chlorinated lime solution. Hygiene and infectious diseases are top of mind. You can't turn on the TV, listen to the radio, or peruse social media feeds without hearing about SARS-CoV-2, commonly known as coronavirus, and the disease it causes, COVID-19. What is this virus? Is your pet at risk? Are you at risk from your pet? What can you do to protect all the members of your family and your community? My guest is an infectious disease specialist, a veterinarian, holds a PhD in veterinary microbiology, and is the chief veterinary medical officer of the William R. Pritchard Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. We're going to bring you the most accurate information that's available at this time. Please let your friends know about this podcast. It could help prevent someone you care for from getting ill and allow us all to get back to the life we enjoyed before COVID-19 as quickly as possible. We'll be right back. There are just certain smells that bring me just absolute joy. The smell of a wood fire, burnt marshmallows, and bug spray. Those are all scents that remind me of tent camping when I was a kid in Yosemite National Park in California. Those are my happy smells. But there are some smells that you find in a house that you should never encounter, and that's a litter box. What I found that works fabulously is Arm & Hammer Clump & Seal. It seals and destroys the odor on contact for 7 days of an odor-free home. Guaranteed. Now, I personally think you should scoop your box on a daily basis, but sometimes you gotta let that box wait a day or two. So don't let your house smell like a litter box. Get Arm & Hammer Clump & Seal. Arm & Hammer, more power to you.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Jane Sykes, I am so honored to have you as a guest, and you must be in great demand right now because of your expertise.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for offering me the opportunity. Yes, I've studied infectious diseases of dogs and cats for my entire career, and I'm an internal medicine specialist with a focused interest in infectious diseases of dogs and cats. So, you know, there's a lot of conversation about that subject right now, and I'm hoping to be able to help pet owners understand the real information about this infectious disease as it relates to their pets.
So one of the things I oftentimes really tout on this particular show for years is that you're saying, Dr. Sykes, that your specialty is infectious diseases in cats and dogs, but that really does apply to infectious diseases in humans. Disease processes are so similar, and oftentimes it's the veterinarian that first sees these diseases come onto, you know, our examining tables.
Yeah, that's right. There are a group of infectious diseases, especially that are called zoonoses, which is a word that means a disease that can be transmitted from animals to people. There are actually also anthropozoonoses, which are diseases that are transmitted from people back to animals. And veterinarians deal with these types of infectious diseases every day. So we do need to know about human diseases, especially people who have immunocompromised health, and how contact with animals may put them at risk of certain diseases.
Well, speaking of diseases, COVID-19, this coronavirus, novel coronavirus, I think some people need to actually know, what's a virus and why are they so hard to destroy? Why can't you just take an antibiotic?
Yeah, so a virus is a microorganism that consists of a nucleic acid like DNA or RNA inside of a protein coat. And that virus can infect animal cells and hijack the machinery of those cells. So it can make copies of itself, what we call replication. So viruses are too small to be seen using a regular microscope, unlike bacteria, which you can see under the microscope, and they're more complex organisms. And they can only multiply inside the living cells of a host, whereas many bacteria can multiply outside host cells as well. And unlike bacteria, antibiotics, antibacterials are not effective against viruses. We have to use special antiviral drugs, and sometimes they can cause toxicity because they're impacting the cells that those viruses replicate in.
But right now, so many people are using antibacterial hand soap and antibacterial agents to clean things down. Why is that working?
Yeah, because a lot of these disinfectants and antibacterials, they contain things like alcohol. And this particular virus, the coronavirus, the new coronavirus, has what we call an outer lipid envelope. So the outside of the virus is very fragile and it's very susceptible to disinfectants. And so products that contain antiseptics are effective at destroying that virus in the environment.
But right now you can't find hand sanitizers and alcohol. I went to my pharmacy. Thankfully, I already had some here in the house, but there isn't any to be found. So will washing help?
Yeah, hand washing with soap will also be effective when it's done properly. But so often people don't wash their hands properly. They're lazy. And many studies have shown that when proper hand washing, you know, singing happy birthday to yourself while you wash your hands and making sure that all surfaces of your hands are washed, usually it's a 10-second quick rinse under the tap. And so there's a lot of room for improvement in hand washing behavior.
So we have to go back to what Mom said, sit there and wash your hands, you know, for a happy birthday song. Thank you.
Exactly.
Another question is, what's an epidemic versus a pandemic? And it's probably just a matter of semantics, but we keep hearing these terms and I don't think a lot of us know what they mean.
Yeah, so that's another good question. So an epidemic is generally considered to be a widespread occurrence of an infectious disease within a community at a particular time. It's actually really kind of a subset of a pandemic. A pandemic is an epidemic that occurs worldwide or over a very, very large area that crosses international boundaries and usually affects a larger number of people. The CDC actually defines a pandemic as an epidemic that has spread over several countries or continents, usually affecting a large number of people.
All right. So it is being spread. It's being transmitted to various people. I was traveling probably 2 weeks ago flying and noticed people wearing masks, and they're like the surgical masks that I will use. Some of them, you know, underneath their noses going, that's really helpful, guys. But in general, how are viral diseases transmitted?
Yeah, so it really depends on the virus. There's many mechanisms by which viral diseases are transmitted. So the ability of a virus to be transmitted depends in part on the part of the body that it's shed from. So is it shed in saliva? Is it shed in feces, in urine? Is it even shed at all? And some viruses are not and therefore can't be transmitted. The amount of virus that's being shed or is being left from the body. Some people don't understand that term shedding that we refer to as giving off virus effectively. And how well also the virus survives in the environment. So viruses that are very hardy in the environment, like canine parvovirus, you know, they can survive up to 18 months in the environment. Whereas viruses that have these outer lipid coatings are usually very susceptible in the environment, and they typically survive hours to days at the most.
So right now, people are concerned with, do I handle, I go to the grocery store and somebody's handing me some dollar bills, or I'm using my credit card. Is one safer than the other? Do I need to wipe everything down? Do I need to walk around with Clorox hygiene wipes? What do I do, for at least for the coronavirus?
Yeah, so we're just starting to learn more about that. And in fact, this is good timing because there was just a publication announced in the New England Journal of Medicine where they actually studied the survival of this virus on surfaces. So the good news is that this virus does have that outer lipid envelope, which makes it susceptible to disinfectants and desiccation. So that study suggested that it might be capable of surviving up to 3 days on some surfaces like plastic and stainless steel, but only up to a day that's on cardboard, which some people have been concerned about the effect of, you know, cardboard deliveries and whether there could be virus on those cardboard boxes, but also the amount of viable or alive virus that's on those surfaces decreases dramatically during those periods. And so the chance that people will get infected by contact with those types of surfaces is fairly low. And the best thing to do, again, is just to go back to proper hand washing.
So at least at this point, we're not running out of soap. So that's good. Keep your bar of soap with you at all times. And I think that's very good information, very things that I hadn't heard of. Is how long can it possibly survive? So, all right, it's good that we can still get our take-ins and I can still hunker down in my home. So viral diseases, you're talking about how they can be spread. Now, you'd mentioned parvo disease in dogs, and thankfully that's a disease that we're seeing less of these days than when I first graduated from UC Davis. But what are some other examples of some common viral diseases in pets? And what's been done to decrease their prevalence?
Yeah, so there's many, many different viruses that cause disease in pets. The vast majority of viruses that infect and that cause disease in dogs and cats cannot infect and cause disease in people. So some examples of dog and cat viral diseases would be in cats, FIV or feline immunodeficiency virus infection, which causes a disease in cats that resembles AIDS in people. Feline leukemia virus is a really important viral infection of cats. There's several different feline respiratory viruses that are very widespread and cause condition that has been commonly referred to as cat flu. There are also many different canine respiratory viruses that cause the disease that's known as canine infectious respiratory disease complex or kennel cough, as many people know it. There's a very serious coronavirus infection of cats called feline infectious peritonitis. We also have important viral diseases of dogs that we vaccinate for, like canine distemper virus and canine parvovirus, as I've already mentioned.
So it really is the vaccine that's kept these numbers down then?
In part, yeah. So we have very good vaccines for some virus infections like canine parvovirus and distemper. And when they're administered properly, they can be completely protective. And that's been really important in decreasing the risk of these diseases in pets. But proper administration means timing puppy and kitten vaccinations properly, using vaccines that have been properly stored, and ensuring that puppies and kittens are kept relatively isolated until at least a week after the last puppy or kitten vaccine in the series. But other measures include things just, again, like basic hygiene and hand washing, proper disinfection and quarantine in breeding and boarding kennels and shelters, and widespread testing in order to detect the virus when there's been outbreaks of disease, and then taking appropriate action should that outbreak occur. So, you know, again, attention to especially overcrowding animals. You know, we see big outbreaks of viral diseases when animals are in shelters, for example, and very crowded and in poor conditions. Viruses like coronaviruses are really more likely to cause disease in those types of situations.
So people hearing this, you know, we're supposed to hunker down when possible, but some people are still going to work. You know, they're going to work, and in the past, they were taking their dogs to doggy daycare. Is that still safe to do, or does it matter facility and what can you look for?
Yeah, I think well-managed doggy daycares that have vaccination policies that make sense and that they don't overcrowd animals and they're doing proper disinfection procedures, they are good, safe operations. And ideally, keeping your dog at home and limiting contact with other pets is going to be the best thing, but obviously that's not possible for everybody.
So it's still okay to walk your dog or be outside with your pet?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that also comes back to, when we're all stuck inside quarantining ourselves, the importance of the human-animal bond is huge. And those types of activities are really good for mental health and stress relief. And so be very encouraging of that type of activity.
I'm very glad that I have my two cats because I am trying to, again, self-quarantine. And I'm a single woman. It's like, I would have gone crazy so far if I didn't have my cats to interact with.
Exactly.
Speaking of going crazy, we know that a couple of years ago, there were two coronaviral diseases that was in the news. It was SARS and MERS. And with both of those being coronaviruses, did they affect pets?
Yeah, so interestingly, SARS was thought to have come originally from bats and then spread to civet cats, which are small mammals that kind of look like weasels. And that was before the first human patient was infected. Now, in terms of domestic animals, during the SARS outbreak in Hong Kong in 2003, there were a small number of pet cats that tested positive, but none of them became sick. And there was absolutely no evidence of virus transmission from pet dogs or cats to people.
So right now I heard of a case, and probably a lot of people have heard of this, in Hong Kong. There were, I think, two dogs that tested a week positive for the novel coronavirus. So what have you heard so far amongst all of your colleagues who are specialists in infectious diseases, Dr. Sykes?
Yeah, so there was one dog in particular that tested repeatedly positive and the dog was kept in quarantine. And that was a weak positive test result in each case. And that suggested that the dog might be infected rather than just contaminated with the virus that happens to be on its hair coat and so forth. Now, it's also important to note that that test that was done picks up the RNA of the virus that's in the center of the virus. It's not actually culturing that organism and showing that it's able to replicate in cells. Subsequently, though, an antibody test was done on that dog, and that test was negative, and that suggested that the dog might not have become infected, although there can be reasons for false negative test results with antibody tests. In addition, one of our major veterinary diagnostic laboratories, IDEX Laboratories, recently made a statement that they had tested thousands of dogs and cats using this RNA test, and no evidence of the coronavirus was found in those dogs and cats. And they were samples that were submitted for testing by veterinarians, dogs and cats that had respiratory diseases and other conditions. So as a result of that information, recently the World Health Organization and Organization for Animal Health stated that there is no evidence at present that dogs and cats can be infected with SARS coronavirus 2, develop COVID-2, the COVID-19, the disease, or spread the disease.
All right. That is awesome news. So we can all still snuggle with our animals, but there's some caveats to that. But that caveat is going to come after this short break. So this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. I'm speaking with Dr. Jane Sykes. She is the veterinary expert on infectious diseases, one of the experts of infectious diseases at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, where she is also the chief veterinary medical officer. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
DINOVITE.com.
When we put him on the Dynavite, he took right to it. All of these symptoms disappeared.
Dynavite is nutrition.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Something that he actually likes to eat. You need to put him on Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
If you love your dog, you don't just want him healthy, you want him to be happy.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
DINOVITE.com.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Sykes, one of the questions that I'm commonly asked, and previously I would have said, no, there's absolutely no chance. People would come in having signs of cold, a flu, etc., and their pet would also be showing signs of respiratory diseases, going, oh, I gave it to my dog, or, oh, my dog gave it to me. In general, in the past, what was the chance of a viral disease or even a bacterial disease going from people to pets and vice versa?
Yeah, in general, the chance of viruses going from people to pets is really quite low. We've had some influenza virus strains that have been capable of being transmitted and capable of causing disease in dogs and cats in the past. In general, the transmission of those, once there's been a spillover of those viral strains to dogs and cats, it's been fairly limited transmission, and that's subsequently died out because they're not very good at moving then within a new species group.
And you had mentioned that it is possible for a pet to have it detected, this novel coronavirus, on their fur, on their bodies, in their respiratory tract, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily able to infect a person.
That's right. And so just also a point of clarification, the disease that people get when they're sick with this coronavirus infection is called COVID-19. That specifically refers to the disease. The virus is called SARS coronavirus 2.
Thank
so sometimes
you.
That's a point of confusion. But
Thank
the virus,
you.
When it actually, if it was able to even infect a dog cell, which we don't know that that's true at this point in time, then that cell within a dog has to make new virus that then has to be able to be transmitted back to people. And there may not be enough virus shed from a dog or a cat to then reinfect people. It just may not be able to even finish replication properly within a dog or cat cell. So those are some of the reasons why maybe a dog could get initially infected but then is unable to transmit the virus back to people.
You were mentioning that the IDEX lab was able to test these samples for the SARS-CoV-2. Is that something that people should consider? We're all concerned about getting ourselves tested, going, okay, I can't get myself tested right now. The test kits aren't out there, but I could get my dog or my cat tested. Should they consider doing that?
It's actually not that easy to get a dog or a cat tested because, you know, the simple act of wanting a test means that you have some reason to suspect that the animal might be infected. And that means that the veterinarian has to take special precautions when collecting the samples, such as wearing high-density surgical masks and full personal protective equipment. And many veterinarians simply aren't set up to make those types of collections. And then subsequently getting that test done in a prospective way has additional challenges. And so we're really still not set up for doing that on a non-research type basis.
So you were mentioning that veterinarians aren't really set up to handle those types of situations. And I totally agree. We have a pet that comes in that has, you know, upper respiratory. We'll put them into our isolation ward. And everyone's isolation ward is a little bit different. It's not like the human hospital. That's not what most veterinary hospitals are set up to do. What does Davis? We'll talk, you know, let's go to the quintessential, the pinnacle of veterinary hospitals, and then what your common regular day veterinarian might have. So what do you have there at Davis, for instance?
Yeah, so we have an isolation ward that's set up to prevent transmission of dog and cat infectious diseases to other dogs and cats. But we're not really set up to handle animals that have infectious diseases that could be transmitted from dogs and cats back to people. So that's where things become complicated. You need specially pressurized facilities, and you need people who have been fitted with special masks, which we call N95 masks. They're high-density surgical masks, and you have to be fit tested in advance, and we don't have a lot of our doctors that have been through that process because we just don't encounter those types of diseases commonly at all. So, you know, really, if we were to see an animal that was at risk of having this viral infection, it would be very challenging for us to find an individual who is properly fit tested, wear the PPE, manage that situation. We don't have proper quarantine facilities for a dog like that.
All right. So there says now most people are going to have to go to their day veterinarian, and they're not set up any better than you are there at UC Davis. So if a person themselves, what can they do to protect themselves and protect their veterinarian and staff if a pet needs to be seen for whatever reason? What are some safeguards they can do?
Okay, so first of all, if your pet develops respiratory signs, the first thing to remember is that there are many, many respiratory viruses and bacteria that cause disease in dogs and cats, and they're very common out there. And so the likelihood that that's caused by SARS coronavirus 2 is extremely minuscule compared with the vast majority of other dog and cat diseases. So, you know, if your dog's sick and needs veterinary attention, you should call your veterinarian and organize for your animal to be brought in and evaluated. Now, if you suspect that you have COVID-19, the disease, things change dramatically, and you then have to quarantine yourself with your animal. We also recommend that people who are known to have the infection take precautions to protect their pets in the home environment. They should quarantine their pets with them in the home, and they should wear a face mask and definitely minimize close contact with their pets. Ideally, have someone else in the household interact with their pets and take care of their pets. But if you're in your household being quarantined and you don't have reason to suspect that you're infected with the SARS coronavirus 2, then just normal hand washing precautions are appropriate, and you should enjoy spending time with your animal, as I've previously explained. But dogs and cats generally shouldn't be allowed to lick faces, chew things like healthcare devices or lick wounds. And we generally do recommend avoiding having animals sleep closely in the bed, especially with immunocompromised people.
Well, you sound like you're not a lot of fun, but it is totally understandable, and you probably shouldn't share ice cream cones and other things. So hygiene, 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 keep washing things. One of the things that we've done at my practice, Laguna Hills Animal Hospital, is to tell people, you know, if they feel more comfortable for that social distancing, which can be difficult, if you need to order prescriptions or you need to have food that you're running out of, a prescription food, call us. Let us know that you need it. We can take your credit card over the phone. Then when you get to the office, just call us from the parking lot. We'll run out, pop it in your car, wash things down afterwards, and you're on your way. And oftentimes people are now saying too, gee, I don't think I have COVID. I really prefer not to be around other people in the hospital. Can you just come out and grab my pet, take that into the hospital, do what you need to do, and just talk to me over the phone? So it's been working out well. So there is ways around that we've been able to keep the number of people in our waiting rooms to a minimum.
Yeah, and there's many vets who are now working to try to more rapidly implement telemedicine programs as well, so that they can take care of animals using distance mechanisms like Zoom and other telemedicine platforms that have been commercially developed.
Great idea. So how can I prepare my pet for this SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus outbreak that's there? What can I do?
Yeah, so I think it's sage to prepare your animal for an emergency situation, just like you are your family. And again, that means keeping on hand at least a 2-week supply of food, and make sure that you've got medications that have been properly refilled. You've got cat litter, other supplies, and make sure that your pet's medical records and vaccines are up to date in case they need to be boarded because you can't take care of them. And as I said, if your pet is sick, contact your veterinarian. Veterinarians are considered essential services still, even in places that are listed as shelter in place right now, and we'll see animals that need care. So contact your veterinarian and get their advice if your animal gets sick. And again, some of those telemedicine services are also becoming increasingly available. just make sure that your pet is well looked after. I think there's a lot of concerns that animals are going to be abandoned as a result of this outbreak, and they need taking care of as well. Make sure that they've got food and water, proper bedding, and have their normal interactions that you would have with them otherwise. And as we said already, going for walks, playing with your animals is always a good idea for mental health benefits.
Great ideas, Dr. Sykes. I know that on our website, you've given us some information of references, and I think that's what's so important right now, having some really reputable sources of information. I'm still very surprised seeing things on YouTube and on Facebook of, oh, yes, you can make this, you know, solution at home that's going to kill everything. It's like, really, folks? No, there's no, you know, vaccine that's out there right now. There is nothing that we can do other than being cautious, and as you're saying, keeping things clean, being reasonable. I love your idea of having 14 days worth, and we should always have that, because here in California, earthquakes, fires, floods, hurricanes, all these things can happen. So we should always be prepared for our pets and, you know, plan ahead. Our website will have lots of information, everything from Davis to Veterinary Information Network, World Health Organization for Animal Health. All of these sites will have links to them so people can learn more. As we have to right now just kind of button this up, what would be maybe three or four tips, Dr. Sykes, that you would want everyone to take away from what we need to know with our conversation today?
Yeah, and I did just want to make one more comment, and that is that the dog that was in Hong Kong, it's recently announced that it did die, and that was just 2 days after it left quarantine. And I think people need to be aware that that dog was a 17-year-old Pomeranian, and unfortunately, we will not be able to get a necropsy on that dog, but it still remains extremely unlikely that it was infected with this virus. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Good information, probably just serendipitous at the age of 17, yes.
17, yeah. So in terms of take-home tips, I would say remember that respiratory illness is extremely common in dogs and cats, especially those that board, go to doggy daycare, or are acquired from shelter environments. And there are more than 10 different viruses and bacteria that cause those signs in dogs, including this canine respiratory coronavirus, which only infects dogs. Interestingly, that virus was first identified in the United Kingdom in boarding kennels and then spread rapidly worldwide. Any pet that develops respiratory illness is much, much, much more likely to be infected with a dog or cat respiratory virus or bacteria than this novel coronavirus. And so pet owners should be told to have their pet evaluated by a vet if signs of runny nose or eyes, cough or sneezing develop, and not allow their pet to contact other animals in the meantime. The second point is that pets do not appear to be important in the transmission of SARS coronavirus 2 to people, and normal precautions should be taken in the home unless someone in the household is sick and known to be infected with the coronavirus, in which case they should limit contact with their pet and wear a face mask and quarantine themselves with their animal. And then finally, I think, and most importantly, it's critical not to overreact and disconnect from your pet. The importance of the human-animal bond here and its positive healthcare effects really cannot be overestimated. There's evidence that pet ownership has many, many health benefits, including reducing mental illness, cardiovascular disease, decreasing blood pressure, improving self-esteem in kids, and the list just goes on and on. So owners shouldn't panic about the possibility of pet infection and transmission. They should instead enjoy all the positive healthcare benefits of the bond that they have with their pets. And sadly, restriction of human movement alone is likely to reduce adoption of pets from shelters, and more animals in need of homes may be euthanized as a result. So we need to try to mitigate those effects as best that we can.
Fabulous information. Thank you so much. Very logical, very unemotional, but very empathetic, where, yeah, I think I'm going to finish this conversation and grab a brush and give my kitty some loving, but won't kiss him on the nose. Dr. Jane Sykes, I so appreciate you being with us today. Dr. Sykes is the Veterinary Medical Officer of William R. Pritchard Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital, UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Dr. Sykes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much as well.
You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on The Pet Doctor. Please listen again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner, and hopefully the safest possible pet owner too. Please tell your friends, family about this particular podcast. I do think it is very important. Take care. Stay healthy.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.